From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, 90.3 WFHE Hickory, welcome to Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. First off, the genie's out of the bottle, the toothpaste out of the tube, the horse out of the barn. Gift-giving these days, very complicated. If you aren't thinking digital or high-tech, though, for that someone special in your life, then you just aren't up with the times, or at least that's what the consumer electronic companies want you to think. Now, we have to admit that there's some awfully good, useful technology gadgets out there that can make our lives so much better, so much brighter, and it's not just for the grown-ups. According to a recent study, by the way, more than one-third of children under the age of two are currently using mobile technology. This Christmas morning, even more parents will see their toddlers unwrap their first tech presents and take the first step down the information highway. So we have some ideas for giving gifts that come up from the ever-changing world of technology, from a couple of guys who spend their every waking moment keeping up with the next best thing in gadgets and such. And I want to mention off the top that we're also going to delve into the safe and secure use of technology to make sure that your gift isn't going to a cyber crook who are more prevalent today than they've ever been. Joining us, the science tech editor for the Charlotte Observer, John Bordson. John, great to see you again.
Good to be here.
And also the founder of Hackerspace, located here in Charlotte, Hackerspace Charlotte, Red Davies. Tell me, Red, welcome, first of all.
Thank you.
Tell me, what in the world is Hackerspace?
Hackerspace is an open community lab. We provide a building and tools and computers and all the other good stuff that people need in order to invent and learn and, most importantly, teach. The Hackerspace really is a building where people get together and teach each other, mentor and mentee.
But when you have that term hacker in the world of technology, it does not conjure up a very pretty picture.
It should. The word hacker is a beautiful word. It is a word which describes someone who takes technology and manipulates it to do something that it wasn't actually originally designed to do.
Such as?
Such as, anything. I mean, you can take any object and get it to do something which has not been intended to. You know, its intended design, especially when you're talking about computer items, when you could be talking about cell phones and getting cell phones to do things that they were not designed to do.
It was that sort of thinking that led us from the PC, the laptop, to the smartphone?
Absolutely. Getting all of that computing information. I mean, the smartphone that most people hold in their hand has more computing power in it. Than NASA did at the time that we put people on the face of the moon.
And the fact of the matter is Hackerspace is in many cities in the United States.
And across the world, yes.
And their objective, again?
Their objective is to teach and to learn. It's all about providing the facilities for people to mentor and be mentored.
Joining us a little bit later on by phone from New York will be author, consumer advocate Bob Sullivan, who's the only person I know, by the way, who calls himself a tech skeptic. Maybe you've seen Bob on literally one of the hundreds of appearances that he has made, especially on NBC News, but network TV in general, talking about some of the evils of our technological advancements. For example, one of several books that Bob has written is called Your Evil Twin Behind the Identity Theft Crisis. More from Bob Sullivan a little bit later on. And while we're on that topic, today's the day that we've learned that there has been a major security breach at Target. The credit card information and other data, personal data, on literally millions of people. There has been a breach at Target. It kind of reminds us, does it not, John, Red, about the hazards involved here and that how cognizant we all should be, just how much caution we should use in using some of this technology. Red?
Absolutely. So some of the fundamental problems we have with the way that things like credit cards and social security numbers are put together is that these systems were designed back when computers either didn't exist in the case of social security, or in the case where there wasn't going to be large scale storage of credit card numbers. So the systems themselves haven't really adapted to that. And so what we've got is we've got a lot of emphasis on people like vendors and employers to keep information like this safe. And it's a very, very, very difficult thing to achieve, which is securing this amount of data and this type of data when the payoff for the criminals is so high.
And John Bordson, from a science tech standpoint, that's mostly what all of the research has been about ever since, you know, the consumer electronics field has offered up things like personal computers, smartphones, and tablet computers.
Exactly. To get back to something that Red said earlier about hacking, or at least in his context of experimenting, fiddling around, trying to figure out how things work, that is the essence of how science got to where it is, finding different uses for other things. To speak to what you were just asked about the fraud and things like this, you have to remember that in this global village that high technology created, there's a lot of people in that village. And this is going to be a problem that can be dealt with piecemeal, but it's going to be ever-evolving, ever-changing. It's not going to go away per se by itself. Wouldn't you say so, Red?
Absolutely. It's an arms race for every technology we produce in order to defend ourselves and our customers. Then attackers will find new methods with which to subvert those. And it's just a continuous arms race between the two fields.
As much advancement, as much has been, we've progressed in the area of technological advancements, obviously, and specifically over the last 10 years, there's been an equal amount of work going on to keep people from using that technology for criminal or sinister means.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I wanted to start off, though, with this, that remember the show's about giving tech gifts for, you know, Christmas and or other holidays. And to ask both of you, remember when giving or getting an electronic gift pretty much meant the latest in the radio, a CD or a DVD player? And the fact of the matter is that's so 2003-ish. I mean, that's just 10 years ago. It has changed dramatically.
Of course, especially now with the migration of content now to digital media. There's a lot more emphasis on things like MP3s and streaming video. And, you know, there are products now which are designed specifically for that, to the point now where the providers don't expect people to buy physical media anymore. They expect people to license the song for playing in their own hands. And then the actual producers then expect to exude more rights over that content than they would when you physically bought a CD.
Change the paradigm somewhat, huh, John?
It does, but there are always going to be people trying to find ways to
circumvent,
do
go around.
Not, well, to do that, but also to adapt it to their own needs.
Mm.
And this is, you know, the same. This is how disc jockeys were born, right? Just spinning different things. What happens if you play it fast and so forth? The same thing is going to be happening with this. It's something that's inevitable. People are always going to be monkeying around with things. It's human nature.
But something that you just mentioned, Red, that really we might need to revisit here quickly. I own a rather large old vinyl record collection. But the music that I own today, really, I can't put my hands on it, can I?
Well, I would argue that you don't actually own it because you're...
But I don't. That's my point.
Exactly.
Right.
Because, I mean, there are
I'm just renting it for a while.
You are. And that's definitely the model that the producers want to move to because they have much more control. It's gone to a point where you have DRM, digital rights management, where the producer can actually specify specific devices, only those devices that you are allowed to play that content on.
The trademark infringements. It used to be up until just a short while ago that you can only play iTunes on an Apple product.
Exactly.
That's what you're speaking.
That is the kind
of
behavior.
The exclusivity.
Yes. And then using the technology to force consumers into those specific boxes.
Now, so while we're talking about music, I was out literally last night and had to go to three different stores only to find my mother. For Christmas this year, she only wanted a simple countertop radio. A radio that does nothing but pick up radio stations. And in the area where she lives, that will obviously be NPR. But what does that say? Is it now obsolete? Are things like that truly, truly obsolete?
I don't think the term is obsolete because there will always be a market for them. But the market certainly is growing older as people who are younger are getting used to consuming media in the new ways.
Contrast that with the fact that I also know a couple of five-year-olds in my life that are going to be getting their own tablet computers.
Oh, boy.
Your thoughts about that, John?
Any kind of gift serves different purposes, whether it's convenience, comfort, or what have you. The thing about technology, it's what is the purpose of the gift? For your mother getting the radio, well, that's what she wants. It's a matter of selection. She selects just to have audio coming from one type of machine, and that's fine. When you get into things for children, though, you have to think, how are they going to learn from this? There's enough things out there that can provide, blowing away an afternoon doing nothing, okay? When you're dealing with technology and with children, though, you want to make it so that they can adapt it, they can experiment with it, they can take it apart. There's been many wind-up watches sacrificed over the decades. Yeah. So people can find out, how does it work? And that's true with electronics and other things too. A friend of mine at The Observer once defined a computer expert as anyone who knows a half hour more than you do. And I think that might be the case.
You're a very big proponent on the fact that if we're going to do this technology thing, then we ought to keep science in mind. That if the device can educate in some way, then that's something that you very, very, very much are in favor of.
Well, I'll tell you, next Monday in the Science and Technology pages, we have a big story on a 21-year-old senior at Duke who is the lead author in a paper, a physics journal, about this new breakthrough where he can take radio waves, microwaves, and actually convert them to electricity that can be stored. And in the writer who did this noted that when he was a kid, one of the things that he did was to take his father's snowblower, or leaf blower rather, and convert it into a hovercraft.
Oh, my.
He used it. He just did something, took it apart, put it together.
I mean, Red's really liking that because in the definition of hackerspace, that's what you guys do.
That's it. It's the learning experience. It's what do you get out of something? And if you're buying for kids, you really need to keep that foremost. What can they do with it?
Red?
Even bigger kids, one of the things that just reminded me of and made me smile, we took two bikes and a couch and a welder and an angle grinder, and we actually created a couch bike, which we cycled through one of the cycling events through Charlotte. And we have a beautiful video of these of two people just lying back in their easy couch and just cycling down Plaza Midwood. It's the kind of thing that warms the cockles of my heart.
All right, that's Red Davies, founder of Hackerspace here in Charlotte. John Bortzen's with us too. He's the science tech editor at the Charlotte Observer. We're talking about tech gifts this year, and we're going to get some great ideas on the other side of the break. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Hendrick Acura, introducing the new fuel-efficient 2014 RDX and MDX sport utility vehicles with up to 90 cubic feet of cargo space for holiday travels. Details at HendrickAcura.com. And Charlotte Museum of History celebrating Twelfth Night with singing, bonfires, toast the fruit trees, and colonial games. Includes candlelight tours and refreshments. Saturday, January 4th. Details at charlottemuseum.org. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, guest host Michael Tomczyk talks about the millennial generation. It's the generation of idle trophy kids, or maybe the generation that'll save us all. That's a big range in how major news outlets have described millennials, those born from the early 80s to the early 2000s. And it's pretty easy to bash on people who grew up on reality TV, hashtags, and selfies, but we'll explore what this generation is actually about when Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next I and Rehm show, according to a new NIH study, 60% of high school seniors do not view regular marijuana use as harmful. The head of the National Institute on Drug Abuse on trends in drug use among teenagers, prescription drug abuse, and the science of drug addiction.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 on WFAE.
We are back on Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. We're talking about tech gifts, trends for the holidays, and beyond. Red Davies is with us, founder of Hackerspace Charlotte. John Bordson, science tech editor at the Charlotte Observer. Okay, let's dive straight into it. Your favorite gift idea, tech gift idea for 2013, Red?
My favorite tech gift idea is the Scribble S2 robot.
Which means?
It is a small robot that you mount a pen to, and it has multiple programming languages you can use. So from a very, very young age, it's got a nice drag and drop programming interface, which then kids can learn to do, you know, 410, rotate 45 degrees, 410, and then draw geometric shapes and do all that other kind of fun stuff. And then when you're talking about more advanced, you can go all the way through high-level programming languages and then all the way down to assembly and really, really fun stuff down there too.
But is the robot doing the thing for the child that the child should be doing, or are they being educated?
They are being educated. They're being educated to think in a programmatic way. And yeah, that is one skill that that we as a society need, the idea to look at a complex problem and break it down into manageable chunks.
Okay, John Bordson, your idea.
Well, if you're talking about adults, one of the big things out there right now are 3D printers. And you can buy one, but you can figure out, well, you know, what are you going to do? Just putz around and get things printed, which is kind of cool.
Okay? Yeah, but make a bobblehead of yourself. Can you not do that?
I guess you could.
Okay,
here's the thing, though, Chris. Those things cost about, what, $1,400, okay?
Yeah, just the consumer-grade 3D printer are very expensive.
But here's the thing. You can buy a kit for $500. Think about what you'll learn about how to put this together, assuming, of course, that you ever get it together.
Yeah. You've seen one and demonstrated before, a 3D printer?
Yeah, they're amazing.
There are a couple of outfits here in Charlotte that are using them on an industrial level.
Right. Well, and for $500, if you want to, you know, spend, you could build your own and see how they come together. If you're talking about kids, there's the hottest toy at Discovery Place. It's called Hex Bugs, and what they are, it's kind of a updated riff on the old, remember those vibrating football things where you'd plug it
bounce
like
that? You'd make the players go.
Exactly.
Right. That was literally from the 60s.
Well, even a little earlier than that maybe. But at any rate, the Hex Bugs, it's kind of like a gerbil thing where you can put these things that move along like that and put them inside, and they just go bouncing around inside this contained system. They come in all different sizes, different colors. There's different variations on there. And just the act of putting together the tubes, well, what happens if we turn it this way or whatever like this? There's a lot of fun in there for kids, and they are moving off the shelves. They initially were sold at Radio Shack, and now you can get them almost anywhere.
All right. What's this Raspberry Pi, Red, that you're talking about?
So Raspberry Pi is a small $35 computer, which was originally designed by a charity in the United Kingdom to be given to school children. The principle behind it is that at $35 cost, a child can program it, break it, hit it with a soldering iron, add circuitry to it. And if they destroy it because they make a mistake, or you know, then it's not a huge issue. We've had Raspberry Pis at the Hackerspace since its inception, and we actually have Raspberry Pis driving 3D printers at the Hackerspace as well.
And what can the Pi do?
The Pi can do anything.
Can it hook up to the internet?
Yes, it can.
Yeah.
So the Pi is a small Linux machine, which is an alternate operating system to Windows. It can't run Windows because Windows only runs on certain types of processors. But it will any piece of software that you're used to seeing on a Windows machine or on a desktop or on a laptop, you are going to be able to find an equivalent on a Raspberry Pi.
John, next on your list.
Well, I came across something the other day that might be kind of fun. I guess you'd call it a stocking stuffer with a higher price. But one of the big things coming out is counter-surveillance ware, what with drones and people concerned about that, even though I haven't seen any flying over my neighborhood. But there's a guy named Adam Harvey who's an artist in New York, and he is marketing counter-surveillance ware. So you can actually – apparently there are T-shirts that you can get for $50 that they're made out of metallized fabric. And purportedly what they do is they can keep you from being detected by a drone.
Which is going to become necessary in case Amazon decides to make a delivery in your neighborhood?
You never know. It's one of those things. If nothing else, even if it all just fades to nothing, it could be one of those things like a pet rock. Who knows?
Yeah. Laser pegs. What's that all about?
Laser pegs, again, it's one of these toys that's great because they allow you to make things. And what they are, they're small glow-in-the-dark pegs that can be assembled in different ways to create different things. So many of these toys, if you go back, they owe their inception to blocks, I guess, and beyond that to the old Gilbert erector sets and things, Legos, just combining things into different things, whether they're fanciful or things that have a purpose to a young mind.
We're talking a lot about tech gifts for children, but there are plenty of tech gifts out there for the big boys too, big boys, big girls too, right?
Absolutely, and you just made me think. You haven't seen a drone fly by your house. We can probably arrange for that later this week if you're interested. One of the things we do is build drones.
Great. Just make sure that they bring my Amazon order that I'm still waiting for. Okay.
Amen.
So bigger kids. Some things which are slightly more practical. One thing which I highly recommend is online backups.
Yeah.
Because it's not something that people necessarily think of. And we've probably had 10, 20, or 30 people come to the Hackerspace's doors with broken hard drives. And we've done our best to repair some, and some we can repair and some we can't. And it is absolutely heartbreaking to see a new parent lose, a year or 2 years worth of photographs of their child, and there is nothing anyone can do for them. So please consider online backups. Doesn't matter which vendor you choose, right. So much that you actually get it done.
So many of the antiviral companies, McAfee, Norton, Symantec, they all sell cloud storage is basically what you're talking about, or a backup storage system for literally pennies a day.
Yes, and it is worth every single penny.
So the gift of storage, of digital storage, is something that's high on your list as well.
It is very high on my list because it's something that people just don't necessarily consider for themselves until they've actually lost something, and by which point it's too late.
And that has happened
almost
to everyone who has used a computer in the last 20 years.
Absolutely.
You're going to lose something like that. Now, I do want to hit on something before we bring Bob Sullivan into it. You have on your list, Red, a Chromecast.
I do.
What is a Chromecast?
A Chromecast is a tiny little computer that plugs into the back of your television, which allows you to stream video and audio from your computer or tablet.
So if you wanted to watch a movie that was only on your computer screen or a YouTube video or just go through a set of photographs that could be in your Photoshop program or whatever, it will stream it wirelessly.
Exactly. And it is ridiculously inexpensive for the hardware that you get. It's only $35, and it's a game changer.
Because the the signal going into the computer is a digital signal.
Mm-hmm.
Signal coming out is a digital signal. And going into the television set is a digital signal.
Yes.
So the quality is good.
The quality is actually pretty good, yes.
So if I could interrupt.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying, Red, is that you are, with this little gadget here, you're turning your television into a monitor.
Yes, you're effectively turning it into a smart television.
And the another product out there that does the exact same thing is the Roku, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're called what?
Streamers,
transmitters, whatever.
Yes.
Something like that. Okay, I promised that we were going to be bringing Bob Sullivan on into the conversation here, and he's joining us by phone right now from New York City. Bob, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. How's everybody?
Doing great. Red Davies is with us. He's the founder of Hackerspace Charlotte. And John Bordson is the science tech writer for the Charlotte Observer, science tech editor, I should say, for the Charlotte Observer. Bob, I wanted you in on this conversation because we're talking about gifts of technology for this holiday season. You, author of several books on the issue about technology, the most notable of which, as I mentioned in the introduction of the show, had to do with your evil twin.
Very timely today. It's a book about identity theft, and you know the news this morning is all about Target, and you know, virtually anybody who shopped at Target since Thanksgiving has probably had their credit card number stolen. So that's how the Grinch stole Christmas this year.
Certainly no Luddite. You embrace technology, but you urge all of us, Bob, to go forward with this, to approach this technology with caution. What do you mean?
What I have found since I've been writing about this for almost 20 years is that virtually every technology that we introduce into our lives, it solves one problem, but it creates another. And again, I'm not against technology. Technology is great. Technology has extended all of our lifespans, and it does all sorts of wonderful things. But it's a 60-40 proposition in my mind. So, for example, technology is great. It's fun to play video games with your kids. It can be great for downtime. Phones are great to give to kids if you're worried about where they are. They're great for emergencies. But too many people are giving too much technology, I think, to children. And they're not doing things like playing outside, getting dirty, not actually reading books. They're killing too much of their free time. And there's some really extreme examples of this. The most extreme example of all is this product that Fisher-Price is getting a lot of people
the baby
right now.
Seat. The baby seat.
Baby seat, yeah. The bouncy baby seat that's built to hold an iPad, you know, suspended in midair about a foot above an infant. And for heaven's sake, the American Pediatric Association recommends quite clearly that children under 2 live as much of a screen-free life as they can. There haven't been definitive studies about what screens do to babies because, of course, we wouldn't intentionally harm babies for such a study. But there's a lot of research which suggests that putting kids in front of screens is really bad for their brains, it's bad for their speech development. And here we have gadgets and major toy companies making devices that encourage this. So technology is great, but only in its proper place, I believe.
You're getting a lot of head nods in agreement from our two other guests. Red, want to weigh in?
Yeah, very briefly, the idea of attaching an iPod to an infant seat, it sounds to me less as a present for the infant and more of a present of the parents.
Mm.
As it's basically a cheap babysitter, it sounds like.
John?
I was just thinking that, I agree also that technology is only so good for so many things. But when you get into just regular science, if you got a youngster, get him a picture book that shows different rocks. Get him a hammer at the Farm and Fleet store and get him something to put his rock collection in. You're achieving the same thing, only they're not watching it on a screen. They're getting outside. They're learning things. They're doing things.
There's something that Bob wrote on this, and he, on his blog, Bob, you wrote, "No, there isn't a great amount of data on the poisonous impact of screens on babies, and for good reason. No one in their right mind would allow a study to examine it, because some children could be potentially harmed by that. And that's your whole point, Bob.
Right, right. And, you know, I just think it's common sense, right? And if you look at it, I think about when we all sit in front of the screen and how we get absorbed. And you know, what happens if you're absorbed in a work task or even absorbed in a game and someone interrupts you and you jump, you know? And think about how hypnotizing those things can be. And then, you know, put that effect into a brain that's barely developing. And as we know, babies' brains are very undeveloped, even in the first 36 months. And so, again, technology's fine, but I love the idea of buying your kid a hammer. You could, if you want to split the, forgive the metaphor, yeah, to split the baby, go ahead and buy them a science kit from Radio Shack or something, where it's a combination of figuring out how digital displays work, but they got to use actually their hands to complete circuits. There's all sorts of great tech gifts that involve something other than vegging out on a couch and just watching a screen.
And why we have you here, Bob, let's talk a little bit about tech gifts for the grown-ups, too. We've got to approach it with caution as well. What, for example, should be the first thing that a person who gets a brand-new smartphone on Christmas morning, what should they do after they've powered it up?
Figure out who's going to pay the bills for the next 24 months?
Yeah, right.
The thing about smartphones is it's the gift that keeps on taking, right? Because nowadays when you get a phone, the gadget only matters somewhat. I mean, I know some of the newer gadgets have features that are interesting, but for the most part, we get phones now, smartphones, because we want to write email and download some apps and use maps and things like that. And for the most part, all those devices are similar. What really matters is what you're paying for data and how much data you get and how well that data works. So someone is going to just give you a smartphone. They're giving you a whole bunch of responsibilities. The first one is, does the phone work reliably where you live, where you work, and along your commute route, which are, you know, where you spend about 90% of the time? Is the data service going to work? Is the 4G service going to work?
Yeah.
And then really, most critically, how much data are you buying? What are the overage prices? And what are you getting yourself into? Because people spend, and I think I really wish folks would think about it this way. You're not spending $99 on a new phone. The average American is going to spend about $2,400 on that phone in the next 2 years, and that's a pretty big investment. And again, is the gift giver spending all $2,400? I hope so, otherwise it's not much of a gift, right?
How high on your list of priorities to do with a new mobile device is securing that mobile device?
There is pretty good antivirus and security software in general for cell phones now. Americans still don't use it, and that's because, to be honest, every year for, I would say, about 5 years, those of us technology prognosticators have said, you know, the big tech news of next year is going to be some massive smartphone virus that's going to leave everyone screaming in the hills. It's going to eat all our contacts and do horrible things to our phones. That hasn't happened yet in the U.S. It has happened in Asia because of the way basically the Android marketplace, Android app marketplace works differently over there than it does here, a lot more chaotic. So and what that means is that for the most part, cell phones have been relatively safe here as long as people don't visit strange websites. And so the phones are pretty secure out of the box. But I would say this, I think it's really important now that instead of there being a few hundreds of thousands of apps, now that there's tens of millions of apps out there, I think people have to get used to the idea that we're used to on our desktops, which is it's not safe to just visit strange places anymore.
All right. Very good. Hey, Bob, got to cut you right there. We'll be back with more of Charlotte Talks right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and PNC Wealth Management, with over 160 years of experience and a team of financial professionals committed to helping clients achieve their financial goals. More from Jennifer Green at 704-686-2129. And Hendrick Honda Hickory, with new and certified pre-owned Hondas offered to the Charlotte Metro and Western North Carolina on Highway 70 in Hickory and at HendrickHondaHickory.com. Next up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, according to a new NIH study, 60% of high school seniors do not view regular marijuana use as harmful. The director of the NIH on drug abuse, on trends in drug use among teenagers, prescription drug use, and the science of drug addiction. That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. . 2013 was a very busy news year, and WFAE kept you informed on the important issues and stories that impacted your life. We're committed to doing the same in 2014 with your help. As this year draws to a close, please take a moment to make a tax-deductible investment in public radio today. Pledge now and be entered to win a MacBook Air. No pledge is necessary, but we hope you'll support WFAE this year. Please call 704-549-9000 or make your gift online at WFAE.org.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guests today include John Bortzen, science tech editor at the Charlotte Observer, Red Davies, founder of Hackerspace, author, consumer advocate, investigative journalist who regularly appears on NBC programs all over the country, and just the author of one of the terrific books, Your Evil Twin, The Identity Theft Crisis in America. Bob Sullivan joining us by phone from New York City. Bob, let me let Red jump in here real quick. He was talking about what would you get for someone who gets a brand new device on Christmas, Red?
The first thing I would get them to buy is a Post-it note. The first thing I would want them to do is to put the Post-it note over the webcam that is attached to their device, so then they can remove it when they deliberately want to take photos.
And the reason for that is?
The reason for that is there is a thriving black market of people trading stolen webcams, which basically means that people could be trading access to your device, which you don't know is being hacked. And people could be watching through those webcams.
Is this what we're talking about, Bob Sullivan, in cautiously approaching this new technology?
Yeah, I think that's right. They have to understand that there's a very basic principle at play here, which is once your phone is connected to the network, once your device is connected to the network is connected to your device. So anything that you can send out there, somebody else can see. And if you approach it that way, we just had a story this week which really puts that crystal in. So turns out that Facebook is among a set of companies that obviously they track everything that you do on Facebook, but they even track, let's say you start typing a message on Facebook and then you think better of it, which happens to all of us, right? I don't hate my boss after all, or I'm not angry at my girlfriend after all. Well, even that typing, which you erase, they track that too. They collect all that for research purposes, and all that tells me is anything that you type, anything that you look into a device that's connected to the network, it's very likely somebody else is seeing it on the other end. So be very, very careful with everything you do.
You're so much more likely to lose your smartphone than you are your laptop computer or some of the other devices out there. So another step that most people should take, immediately password protect any mobile device. Right, Bob?
Yeah, there's still data that shows that somewhere close to half of folks aren't password protecting their tablets or smartphones, and that's just nuts. Because nowadays, the smartphone is basically a gateway into your whole digital life. We've got all our contacts in there. Folks like Google have done everything they can to make sure that your Google desktop life and your Google mobile life are merged. So just think about what someone could do if they opened up your phone and started looking through your email and probably getting all your password hints, and they could break into everything. So if you don't have a password on your phone, you're crazy.
All right, Red Davies.
Absolutely. We've seen several cases of that when websites have been compromised and passwords have been stolen. The first place that that hackers will go for, or criminals will go for, is probably a better term right there. The first thing they will go for is the email. Because from there, I can reset your PayPal account, your email, your web banking. And once I've got all of those, I can drain you dry of any finances you have.
Good advice, huh, Bob?
Yeah, I think so. And again, when you think about how you – we call it the restore your password vulnerability, right? Think about what happens if you can't get into Facebook or your bank or any of those things. Well, they send you an email. So if someone has access to your email, they have access to everything.
All right, very good. Bob Sullivan, thanks so much for joining us. Happy holidays to you.
And to you and to all your listeners, too.
All right, fantastic. Let's go down the list again. The best tablet, the best phone out there, in your opinion, Red?
The best tablet out there, in my view, is the Galaxy Note. Mm. Galaxy Note 2, specifically.
What do you like about it?
I like Android over and above the iPad. The iPad offering is actually very nice, too, the iPad Air. My preference is for Android because Android is a better fit for people who want to be technical and dig deep and have control of their device, whereas the iPad and the Apple products are really almost like a padded room. It's very difficult to do anything in the padded room apart from bounce off the walls.
John Portson, tell me about Newton's Cradle.
We're talking low tech with high ideas behind it.
I like it.
It's just something that you could consider an objet d'art. It's essentially kind of a suspended cradle of balls. Okay, and they're all lined up right next to each other, and you lift one on one end, and you see, well, gee, that knocks one over. You pull two, well, that knocks how many the other way?
Yeah.
And you can just – it's one of those things. It's a great time waster that gets you thinking about some of the principles behind it. It's called Newton's Cradle, but there's also it's a little more complex than that when you get into it. It's an adjustment by a physicist named Hertz, the equation to it, on something called Hooke's Law, which gets into the early days of physics and things like that. But it's a great great thing, and it looks nice on a desk.
And you're also – you wrote about high-tech gift items that you wouldn't be surprised at all to learn that the experts at this are in the hold-their-breath mode for the holidays. The rollout of Google Glasses in 2014 will probably be a gotta-get for many people.
I think so, but the thing is you got to get the money for it. And
what are we talking about?
Well, we're looking at, I'd say, probably anywhere between some of the prices I've seen, anywhere between $2,500 and $6,000.
Oh, my goodness. And what do they do?
Well, it's
everything?
you know, it's kind of indicative of the state of the world here in that it's just one more way to take around data. It's an extension of where we went from, you know, large computers to laptops to phones that act as computers and other things like that. Now it's just like you're basically wearing something that has a lot of apps on it. The trick is how long is that going to be lasting before it is superseded by something else?
Yeah, and what could that something else be?
They could be contact lenses.
Yeah,
it's a matter of the interface. I mean, today we carry around in the palm of our hand the entire contents of the knowledge of man.
Listen, we have a problem though with texting while driving. Mm-hmm. Do I really want to be on I-85 headed towards Atlanta with somebody with their Google Glasses on in the opposite direction?
I think it comes down to besides the safety thing, of course, yeah. It gets down to an even more elemental question. How do you want to be connected to other people? Do you want to be, you know, in the loop for everything all the time?
Right.
You never want to get away from it. It's crazy. You know, sometimes you just need to pull the plug, take out the batteries,
right,
and just do something else and not be fully wired into everything everywhere.
Your thoughts about that, Red?
I agree. I mean, we all need moments of solitude. And one of the fundamental changes that I've noticed, especially with myself, for example, when we move from community to community, and you know, I don't know if you were ever a kid and moved from one part of the country to the other, and you promised your old friends that you would write, but you never did, and you know those friendships declined and new friendships were formed, and that was a natural part of life. Now we have Facebook. And I'll have people who I went to school with, you know, 20-something years ago, and they're trying to reconnect like we're old best buds. And as soon as you fall into that trap, you now try to maintain the same level of friendship with those people as you do with people in your real world, and then the real world suffers. And so be careful with what you commit to when you're online.
A servant to two masters. It's extremely difficult to do under any of the circumstances. I still want to go back to the Google Glasses, though, and trying to figure out the practical application here?
The practical application is going to be just ease of interface instead of having to grab your phone and do this kind of stuff. You know, move your hand around and have it in front of you. You can just talk to the phone. You can just talk to the glasses, and the glasses will react, and it'll show you in an overhead display the answers to all of your questions.
But while I'm doing something else, though, physically.
Sure.
Walking.
Sure.
Driving.
Sure.
And whatever.
How about performing open heart surgery?
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing that's going to come in the future.
Okay, so there is a beneficial practical application of
Absolutely.
What we're talking about here, is that you can you have the glasses on, you're performing surgery, or you're working on a transistor radio,
mm-hmm.
That you can suddenly call up the internet and
have the information in front of you and have it in the same eye line as you actually working.
Your thoughts about that, John?
It's a brave new world, Chris.
Yeah. Aldous Huxley. Yeah.
I tell you, I personally own a dumb phone.
The old flip phone.
I have an old – mine is just about an antique, I tell you. I'm the only one in my family that always answers my phone when it rings. Technology only gets you so far.
Yeah. Continuing on, though, about – they're going to be speaking of the smartphones, that so many people have abandoned cameras and their smartphones are in fact their cameras. And there is so much practical use for that, that we've now reached the point where there are even external lenses for your smartphones, Red.
Absolutely. And because, like you say, the smartphone is with everyone wherever they go. And the lenses have a magnetic clip on them, and you just line the lens up with the camera on your phone, and it just clicks into place, and just offers a lot more flexibility.
Are they terribly expensive?
They are not. You can pick them up for between $40 and $100.
Going back to the whole thing about giving the gift of storage, how about the gift of apps for your smartphone or your mobile device?
So one of the interesting things that I've noticed about purchasing apps is that very few people will think twice about going into a coffee shop and ordering a coffee, and paying $1 or $2. But when someone looks in the app store and they see that something is going to cost them 99 cents, they will just wreck themselves with the idea that it's almost like they're buying a second house. So the idea of giving someone a gift card for those app stores will hopefully, you know, make that transition a little easier for them.
Are either of you familiar with what's called the the Tile app? And it is a small Tile that you hook onto your keychain. Should you ever lose your keys, you can just go to your smartphone and, if I'm understanding it correctly, and find your keys.
Yes, and what it does is it uses everyone else's smartphone who owns the Tile app to actually locate those too. So if you were to drop it in a mall and someone was to walk past with their smartphone, if they're actually a subscriber to the same service, then that would actually detect where your keys are for you.
Now, do you think the watches, Samsung, is it the watches that are being sold, the computer watches? Is that ever going to catch on?
I don't think so personally, because I think the time of having stuff on your wrist is gone. But I mean, there are multiple competing. There's also the Meta Watch, and there's also the Pebble, which was a Kickstarter watch, and those are also designed to basically be second displays for your phones. So I think we're going to be moving to more towards the glasses side than we are the watch side, as scary as that might be to some.
There was a day not too long ago when everybody had a wristwatch. Everybody had an alarm clock.
Right.
Okay. Now, I want to know what time it is. I can just open my dumb phone. It's smart enough to have the readout on there that says what time it is. My kids, they don't have alarm clocks. Their iPads go off.
Right. So it it's changed the way that we have done things. I'm going to read off a couple of items here that are on a high-tech gift list of some other folks. It's the Planon Print Stick. It is a mobile printer that measures just 11 inches by 2 by 2. It makes it real easy to store in a backpack, and you use it for printing things like boarding passes, movie tickets, anything that you have to print on paper right then and there. Heard about this?
I have not, but that sounds great.
$299 for the printer, and you get three 20-page print cartridges when you buy one of these. The 12-in-1 survival tool is for the person who likes to stay prepared for an emergency. It's got a panic alarm, an LED flashlight, digital FM radio, motion-activated security alarm, red emergency flasher, cell phone charger, AC charging adapter input, compass, hand crank charger, signal mirror, thermometer, and a lanyard.
How big is that?
It's difficult. I have not seen the photograph on it, but at 12-in-1, I'm sure that it's got to be somewhat bulky, but it's only $40. And it's sold by a Sharper Image.
Mm-hmm. The trick, of course, is to find it when you need it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what the tile is for.
Yeah, right, there you go.
Or that you carry it around. Any other ideas that you have on your list there, Red, that you think people should give a second look to?
So one of the things about smartphones, one of the things that hasn't really kept up has been the amount of battery life that comes with a lot of these high-powered computers. So one of the things that that I love is I have these portable power packs, and it allows you to store the equivalent of one or two phones worth of battery charge, and they charge the exact same way as a cell phone. And then when your cell phone starts running out of charge, you just plug this into your phone, and you've got an entire day's worth of charge left.
Real quickly, during the show a year from now, what are we going to be talking about? Your projections on what is going to be the high-tech gift for Christmas 2014. John?
Boy, I don't know. There might be robots here having this conversation yeah. instead of us. We'll send our avatars in, okay, Chris?
Outstanding, Red.
I'd like to see more on the way of robotics and more on the way of getting people back to basics and back to electronics. There's a lot of fun you can have out there with electronics, and more people need to do it.
Red Davies, founder of Hackerspace here in Charlotte. John Bordson, science tech editor at the Charlotte Observer. Thanks both for being with us.
Thank you.
See you later.
Happy holidays. Thanks for joining us on Charlotte Talks.